This is your last chance to enter the Ohio Lottery's Fun Turns 50 promotion. Score $3,500 and two tickets to the epic party at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, where you could win part of another $400,000 in cash prizes. Enter the new 50th anniversary scratch-off or $50 worth of eligible non-winning $5 or $10 scratch-offs and My Lotto rewards through the Ohio Lottery app. Hurry up! The last entry deadline is May 13th. Lottery players are subject to Ohio laws and commission regulations. Play responsibly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the podcast that takes a light-hearted look at lesser-known London stories with your own personal blue badge professional tourist guides.
She's Fiona.
And she's Alex.
And this is the Ladies Who London podcast.
Hello.
Welcome, welcome. How are you all doing? Good, lovely. Yep, great.
That was a pause. Good. Go on, tell us all your news, all of it in one go. Quickly, come on. Yay! That's fabulous.
Very interesting. Goodness me, how are you, Fiona?
I'm all right. Good. It's still hot. It's still busy, mind you. Yeah, I don't know. This time of year, it's all about the weather. Maybe because we're outdoors so much.
Maybe
that it has quite a impact.
It's been disgustingly hot.
Friday and Saturday were super hot, and I didn't think I had like jam-packed days, but I walked 20,000 steps both days, and by Saturday night, Sunday morning, I was just like,
So by listeners, it was my birthday on Friday of last week, and I had a little party on Saturday, which Fiona came after work, bless her. Now that's commitment. And I just spent the entirety of Saturday sweating. It was just disgusting, and I mostly just potted around the house and. Okay, I do want to know though, whose brilliant brain it was that in hot weather barbecues are a good thing, because it just added to the heat. Oh man!
Because you said, "Oh, come in, look, I'll just put a few more sausages on, and then you lit some more charcoal just behind my head."
Other ones
and I was like, "What?"
Gone. The other ones had gone too. I know. I was thinking, "Yeah, this is insane, absolutely insane." But we had a lovely party, didn't we? It was very nice.
It was
a couple of guides there, loads of lovely friends, and it was a low key birthday for me, for obvious reasons this year. But yeah, it was absolutely wonderful.
Yes, and then
very sadly, 2 days after that, my lovely pet Fraggle died. So I'm very sad at the moment. So it's been a bit of a rubbish year, to be honest.
Your cake was appropriate.
My cake was appropriate. I did a big cake in the shape of a massive poo, which I made myself, and it did look like a poo. I might put something on my social. I haven't done my socials for ages, but it looked like a massive poo, and I covered it in glitter as well because you know. You can't polish a turd, but you can try.
But it was very tasty.
It was tasty.
More tasty than that sounds.
Yeah.
Kind of, you know.
More tasty than a poo cake should have been. But anyway.
Yeah.
So it's been a bit of this year just keeps, kicking me in the guts. But hey ho, we continue. We're going to get through it. And a bit of a sad week with Fraggle going. But hey, it's one of those ones. I hope you're all having a better week, though.
I mean, I don't want to tempt fate, but I think it might be hard to find someone who's having a worse week.
I know. So what that means, actually, listeners, is partly because I'm going back to my parents to bury Fraggle, but also because I've got chemo this week. There's a chance I might not make the outing on the 1st of July to the concert, but Fiona will still be there. I'm going to try and be there. But I'm not quite sure at the minute, but Fiona will be there, won't you, for the lovely concert for the Match Girls.
Yes,
it's very
absolutely
exciting.
Yes. So come along and say hello.
If you're coming along, let us know. I might put a little thing up on the social media. I'm sorry, I haven't done anything on socials for ages because I've basically just been trying to get through this year and I haven't had the brain space, but I will try and get back onto that. But if you are coming, I realise it's been fairly last minute notice, but if you are, please let us know because it would be lovely to see you. And we can report back as to how the music was. I'm sure it's going to be gorgeous.
Yeah.
Any parish notices before we get into the podcast?
I don't think there are.
No.
There was something during the week that I saw and I thought, oh, I should mention that just because it's a thing that's going to happen in London and it's a good thing. And can I remember
completely
what it
forgotten.
Was?
No. Hopefully it'll come to us.
So it might come to us before the end, in which case we'll let you know. Yeah. But I mean, you know, I read it on a thing about things going on in London.
This is almost as good as my one last week about having read about Mrs. Beaton's husband but not being able to remember what it was.
Yeah. So, but it's out there in the world already. It's not like a sneak preview of exciting news. It's just a thing that's going on.
And I should say, in the post today, my Eliza Acton book arrived. I did order that book. So I haven't had a chance to have a flip through it yet because I'm all a bit, you know, discombobulated right now. But I will have a look and I will see if I can construct something takes 3 hours to boil or whatever.
Yeah. We'll have or some sort of elaborate jelly.
Yes.
I'm feeling like she might have elaborate jellies.
Elaborate jelly.
But maybe less so than Mrs. Beaton. I don't know.
We'll find out. I'll have a flip through and I'll report back. Yeah.
Okay. I'm now thinking, what is the thing that we can do kind of in tribute for this week's talk? And I'm not sure. I'm going to leave that thought with you at the end. How do we commemorate? Another lady.
Oh, okay. So Fiona's very kindly taken on the mantle again this week because I'm all a bit all over the shop. So it's another Fiona special and it's another lady.
It's another lady. Okay. It's another lady who has a number of statues actually around London. Yeah. So there was a point when you've talked about Ada Salter, I know,
very early on.
And when her statue was added to that family group, she was sort of quoted as being something like the 8th or 9th statue of a woman in London. And of those other women, one was Queen Victoria and two were Queen Anne.
Yeah.
And you kind of think, okay, so that's...
That's where we're at.
Yeah. And so then I was thinking, so who were the other women? You know, who are the women who do get those early statues? Mm. And why are they commemorated so much? And so I thought, well, I'll go back and have a look and see who they are. And two of them are nurses. Good sort of feminine professions, you know, caring, blah, blah, blah. But our person we're going to talk about today is an actress.
Ooh.
A Welsh actress.
Okay.
Sarah Siddons.
Now, you know, she's been on my list for a while and I don't know why I haven't pulled her forward sooner. Because I've always wanted to know a little bit more about her. Well, now I don't have to do the work because you've done it for me.
I'm going to tell you all about it.
Yeah.
Yes. So we're going to start our story in 1783.
Cast your minds back.
Just before last Tuesday, go back a bit further. 1783. So we're talking end of the Georgian era. And she appears in the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane, and has an absolute triumph. Mm. So much so that she then sort of stays working at the Theatre Royal for about 19 years. A little bit on and off. She goes off and does other things as well. And she was known... was there a question in there?
There was a question forming, but no, carry on.
So she particularly was known for her tragic heroines. Mm. So I don't know what the rules about good luck and bad luck are, but let's call her Lady M from the Scottish play.
Yes.
Just in case.
Just in case.
Just in case.
Yeah, I don't know if the bad luck rules kind of go on to a podcast or not, but let's I've had my share of bad luck this year, so let's not tempt it.
She seems like she brought real kind of human emotional qualities to characters. She played them as rounded characters. Mm. She was one of the few people who used to read the whole play, which seems a bit mad to us now. Like, obviously you read the whole play if you're going to be in it. But, you know, go back to Shakespearean era and each actor only gets their prompt script, so they only get their parts.
Because they didn't have the printing the way we do now. And
yeah, you know, exactly. Sort of and so that sort of the legacy of that is that still in the 1700s, you get quite a lot of actors who read their part and not the bits in between. And they don't know what's going on in the rest of the play. she obviously went, do you know what? Maybe my character gets mentioned at other times. Maybe there's something useful I can learn from reading.
There's backstory.
Yeah. So she actually used to sit in the wings and watch the entire play at times, which, you know, brilliant idea, seems like. Yeah. And actually, kind of just calling back to when we were talking about theatre licensing, we talked about Charles Macklin, who we remember for Stabbing, but yeah. He was also, you know, portraying characters in a more kind of, like, they weren't just good or bad. They were kind of, you know, rounded individuals and things. And that's about the same time. He's a little bit ahead of her, but, roughly the same kind of era in a way. So it's a move that's sort of happening and things. But what I found quite extraordinary is that she played quite a lot of parts while quite pregnant.
Right. Now that's intriguing.
Yeah.
Because especially back then, pregnant women were often shut off and, you know, once you kind of started showing, you were behind closed doors and then lying in hospitals and stuff like that.
Yeah, all of that.
That's quite groundbreaking.
So we'll come back to one of the examples of that in a moment. But if you're thinking about playing Lady M.
Thank you. Yeah.
You know, there is that speech that she has about, I have given suck and know how tender 'tis to love the babe that milks me. I would, while it was, and I can't remember the rest, but it carries on, dash its brains out, had I so sworn to do so, blah, blah, blah. Mm. But it's like, you know, they don't have a child as a couple, but it seems like she has had a child. So
right.
Where has that child gone? And is that something that motivates Lady Macbeth to, I can't keep up the letters, you know, to act the way she does and blah, blah, blah. And she was one of the first people to kind of play her as a mother or a potential mother, you know, but also to be doing that while actually pregnant is almost sort of stretching the bounds of like nowadays we have lots of, you know, more likely to have gender blind casting or, you know, color blind casting or whatever, but that's an intriguing version of it. But she also played Hamlet quite a lot of times.
Interesting, because we've just had in the last week, haven't we, another woman very famous for playing a traditionally male character in Shakespeare's plays, that of King Lear. Who died this week.
Yes, Glenda Jackson.
Thank you, Glenda Jackson.
Glenda, who was almost my MP. No, I was never in, but she was the next constituency over to me when I was growing up. And by all accounts, a very, you know, good local, you know, hardworking, well-liked constituency.
I should also say, talking of mothers, if you can hear rustling in the background, my mum's just come back from the shop, so she's putting some things away. So apologies if you can hear rustling in the background, gang, but that's what that is. Back to Lady M.
Yes.
So
she, you know, and also back then you did have women playing kind of men on stage, but they were like breeches roles, they were known as. So you get character, in fact, it's not female actresses playing men, it's female characters playing men within the play.
Yes.
So all those sort of Shakespearean parts where people dress up as the opposite sex and then it all gets very confusing and things. Yeah. That was one thing which happened quite a lot, but it was a quite different thing for a woman to play an actual male part.
Yeah.
So she was a superstar of her.
And so she was playing these parts while she was pregnant, these male roles?
I don't know about the male roles particularly, but she had six kids. Some of them maybe, and she played Hamlet on and off quite a few times over about 30 years. Right. Also worth saying, actually, of her six children, only two survived her.
Oh, yikes.
So one died as a very infant, one died age six, and then there were two older daughters. There were, I think, six daughters, at least two died, you know, in adulthood, but before her, as well. So, you know, heartbreakingly.
That's dreadful. That's really dreadful.
But she wasn't an overnight sensation. So let's just go back. So that was 1783, appears on the London stage, blows everyone away, is then painted by Gainsborough and Reynolds and Thomas Lawrence and, you know, all of the best, biggest names of portraiture at that time. But if we go back to 1775, so what's that? 8 years earlier.
Just quick maths.
Panic. She has another season at the Theatre Royal, Drury Lane. This time was David Garrick. It was his last season that he was actor manager there. And she arrives and she was not a success at all. And people have said maybe she was kind of intimidated by London. It was the first time she'd been to London. Maybe he had brought her in actually as part of political manoeuvrings within the other cast. So he wanted her to sort of be a kind of upstart to annoy the other two established actresses who were there. But also, actually, she had just had her second child at that point, and she'd gone into labour while on stage somewhere else.
What? Really?
And her daughter was born prematurely, and then she gets this job in London, and she has to go because it's London, you know. So maybe also she was a bit worn out, and, you know, maybe there's lots of good reasons why she wasn't a great success that first. But she kind of went back to the provinces. She had a very successful run in for a few years in Bath, lived in Bath quite happily for a while and things. But actually she was from a sort of theatrical dynasty, is the only word for it, and quite a few of her siblings were actors as well. She was the eldest of 12, and I think 8 of them went into the theatre.
So it's a dynasty. It's a proper dynasty.
It's absolutely a dynasty. And I'd never put them two together because Siddle is her married name, but her maiden name is Kemble.
Oh, okay. Now, Kemble, that's ringing a bell.
Yes, there's a Kemble Street.
Right.
If you round about Covent Garden, there's quite a few streets that were, slum clearance streets, basically, that were put in, I think, late 1800s, something like that. And there's Keane and Kemble and Garrick as well. And they're all named after actors. So her brother, I think, is probably the most famous, who was Charles something Kemble.
Okay.
But there's a few of them. And actually her grandfather started the theatrical troupe. And what I quite like is that he was quite influenced by John Wesley. So his troupe,
as in the preacher guy, yeah.
Yes, yeah, the father of grandfather of Methodism and things. So although like travelling circus troupes probably have a slightly dodgy reputation and you think, oh, there might be all sorts of goings on and, you know, morally, blah, blah, blah. No, not a bit of it. John Ward, Sarah's grandfather, actually straight-laced, no funny business at all because of Wesley's influence.
No jiggery pokery.
Oh, no. And they were around Warwickshire.
Okay.
And sort of in and out of Wales and things, I think. And one of his daughters wants to marry one of his actors. And he's very against this to start with. And eventually is persuaded it's okay. And he maybe the actor actually wasn't that good an actor.
Right.
So this has become Sarah's father, as it were. But what the grandfather says to his daughter is, well, my dear, you have not disobeyed me. The devil himself could not make an actor out of your husband.
Whoa, that's a bit harsh.
Which is a bit harsh given he's employed him in his theatrical troupe.
Yeah.
But there you go. So Roger Kemble gets married to Sally, who's Sarah's mother. And Roger is Catholic and Sally is Protestant.
Okay.
And they have these 12 children. So all the boys are brought up Catholic and the girls are brought up Protestant.
No.
Yes. Now, isn't that a fabulous kind of...
That's hilarious.
Yes.
So just divide straight down the middle, easy as.
That's it.
Oh, my God, there you go. Funny. That's really odd.
Yeah. And I mean, I always think with religion, I'm not religiously inclined, but I kind of have quite a lot of respect for the people. If you're going to do it properly.
Yeah.
And go for it. But then that does make it quite difficult to be inclusive and, you know, ecumenical and friends with everyone else, because surely if you believe a thing wholeheartedly. But I know a lot of people say there's a lot of overlap between different faiths and we can celebrate the where we overlap and not worry about the differences maybe too much and things. But anyway, that seemed a really intriguing solution.
Yeah, oh my goodness, I love that.
To that situation. So the first record we have of Sarah actually performing is her age 12 doing something. And in that same play, one of her younger brothers, who I think is 8, is also in the cast. So, you know, she could well have been a trooper going for a few years by the time she gets to be 12. But she also manages to have a few years in a school, in a permanent school. So even though they're traveling around doing performances, they have a base and things.
Yeah.
And then she goes off for a bit to be a sort of companion to a rich widow. And
a companion. Now, is that the sort of thing where they kind of, I don't know, read and do cross stitch together
so.
And things like that?
Yes. And it seems like more like a paid friend than a member of staff,
right?
Kind of, in a way. And it seems like that stands her in quite good stead, because that's her one sort of glimpse into that world of, you know, aristocratic life.
Yeah.
And later on, when she's super successful, she goes to court and she goes and appears at court to Queen Charlotte, who is, of course, Bridgerton. Era Queen Charlotte, as it were, and the wife of George III. And, you know, the dresses, sack dresses in those days, they're the really mad, wide-skirted, narrow front to back, but massively, massively wide and big kind of capes off your shoulders and things, and quite difficult to walk in and all those kind of things, I'm sure. And there was this comment about her that she looked entirely at ease in court, even though she wasn't used to wearing these dresses and things. And someone remarked upon it and she sort of said, I've never been before. But they were like, but you're so poised. And so
good
maybe
training,
little,
darling. I went to RADA.
Yes. So, she does this sort of companionship bit and then gets married. And she, age 19... she's a bit younger, but she falls in love with an actor in her parents'
danger,
troupe.
Don't do that.
10 years older. He's not the best prospect. There is someone else who is a suitor, who is a local farmer, who is actually, you know, on paper, much, much more promising kind of career-wise and things. But she says no, she wants to marry William Siddons. And they seem to be in... reasonably happy for about 30 years together. They eventually kind of drifted apart, but she was a better actress than he was an actor. A little bit repeating the previous generation perhaps, but it seems like he kind of started to take care of the kids as well, which again is like
very unusual for that era.
Yeah, exactly. And slightly sort of became her manager, so he was like doing the deals with the theatres and...
Well, that's really good. Like, if he's not as good of an actor as she, then know where your strengths lie, man. You know, go into the admin side.
Absolutely.
Everyone needs a bit of admin.
Yeah. So I was quite sort of pleasingly, I thought, yeah, that's good. But there is a suggestion that, like, she worked really hard because he was quite sort of greedy, so he kept making her work. But actually many, many times she said, I'm going to retire. And when I've got X amount of money in the bank, I will retire. And X amount of money, I think, was about £10,000,
right,
which was a hefty sum in those days. But even when she had quite a lot more than that. She never retired. And I mean, actors don't, do they? They just keep pottering on because why not? It's such fun, you know.
Yeah.
So, and even after she'd sort of wasn't doing whole seasons, she'd come back for like benefit performances.
That's
and
it,
just
yeah.
do bits here and there.
I've like retired, that. Except for the odd thing. You haven't retired at all, have you? You just scaled down.
You're just carrying on. Yeah. So now she does one thing that caught my eye. She cropped up in something that I talk about sometimes in Covent Garden, which is the Old Price Riots.
Ooh,
I can't remember
this.
Whether we've... Ah, okay.
No.
So, the Royal Opera House, grand old theatre of London, very respectable, opera, ballet, blah, blah, blah. But they had a couple of occasions they had riots in the Opera House.
As you do.
One of them was... after the theatre had burnt down, which is the other thing theatres are always doing, so they rebuild the theatre. And having rebuilt, they put up the prices to pay for the rebuilding, which, I mean, you know, reasonable in a way. But the public were not impressed by this. So what they would do was go in and buy a ticket at the new price, let's remember, sit down, wait for the show to start, and then as soon as the kind of overture began... some of them would just stand up and turn their backs to the stage, but some of them had a special Old Price Riot dance that
Brilliant.
They did, and some of them had maracas or whatever, you know, the maybe not maracas, but something like that, and they would chant, Old Price, Old Price, Old Price.
Really? Oh, my goodness.
And this went on and on for, I don't know, 6 weeks or so before the management went, okay, look, just have the old prices back. Whatever.
Maybe we should do that. Maybe we should do that again.
Yeah. You have to get enough people to join in. Otherwise, it's going to be...
I mean, the price of West End tickets now, I imagine there'd be a few people that wouldn't be averse to rioting.
Yeah, yeah. But, you know, people buying tickets at the new price to protest about the price of the tickets. That's
fantastic.
A devotion to
yeah.
Yeah. And I've always felt slightly sorry for the people on stage while this was going on, but I hadn't really thought about who it was. Turns out one of them was Sarah Siddons.
Wow.
So one of her seasons there was quite disrupted by the Old Price riots.
Dances. Love it.
Yeah, yeah. but she does have... So right at the beginning, I was talking about statues, and she has a statue in London in... Do you know where she is?
No, I feel like I should, because... she is such a legendary name, and I am very much stalling for time here.
Yeah.
But I'm going to assume it's like in the Theatre Royal Drury Lane or on the front of it or something like that. No.
And I think that's why it's one that would be very easy to overlook. If you were like counting off statues on your fingers, it's where she was buried in St. Mary's Paddington Churchyard.
Okay.
Which then the churchyard eventually became a kind of just a bit of green space, and a lot of the burials were moved somewhere else. There was a handful that were kept, and she's one of the ones that was kept. So I think I can't now picture it. I've seen her statue in the flesh, but I didn't notice whether her grave was nearby or not. But it's sort of it's been quite nearby. So it's called Paddington Green, and it's a bit of green space just north of the Westway.
Okay.
So just where, if you know London, the elevated road of the Westway kind of goes up into the air. It's kind of in the first bit of elevated motorway.
So when you're coming out of London, you can have a look over towards, well, it's the Paddington Basin, isn't it, really, and the St. Mary's Hospital and all of that.
Yeah, exactly. And all around there.
And
there is a slightly odd patch of... it's a little bit bleak. It's sort of flat grass, and it's right alongside a really busy road now. So it's not the most fabulously scenic location, but it is, I mean, it's logical, it's where she was buried. And 5,000 people went to her funeral.
Wow.
And she died, let me just go back and see. So she was born 1755, and she died in 1831.
Oh, so, yeah.
So 70 or
six,
something
like that.
And she gets the statue in 1897.
But you said she's got more than one statue.
Yes. Well, the other one, there's another one indoors.
Ah, now is this the Actors' Church, possibly? some balls. No. Okay.
No.
Where else?
There's something about that that's right.
In a church.
In a church.
Okay. where else would that be then? Not the Savoy Church?
Not the Savoy Church.
No. I don't know. Pass. St. Paul's.
No, try the other one. Other one. Bigger.
Westminster Abbey?
Westminster Abbey.
There's never a sculpture to her there.
There is.
Where?
There is. Well, so it's a place that none of us... See, when we go as guides around Westminster Abbey, we do have... It's one of the places where the Abbey kind of goes, okay, these are the places we want you to guide, because otherwise there's some corners that are really small and it's just, you can imagine
Lock
if we try to take people in. And yeah. So it's one of the chapels we don't tend to go into. It's St. Andrew's Chapel, which is behind General Wolfe.
Oh.
So it's kind of alongside the North Transept.
Now, I send people in that one quite a lot. I don't go in. If anyone from Westminster Abbey is listening, I don't go in.
Never go in.
But I send people in there because that is the one that has the incredible sculpture, which I put recently on my stories on Instagram, actually, of the... Now, again, my brain is just not working at the minute, but the man and his wife, Elizabeth is her name, and she's died in childbirth, and the sculpture, the skeleton is coming out from underneath.
Oh.
And trying to get her, and the detail on it is utterly incredible. And I'm pretty sure if it's where that they're behind General Wolfe, so that must be that one.
Okay, yeah. So kind of behind General Wolfe, there's like three chapels side by side, or in I don't know whether they're like whether you can get through them from General Wolfe, or whether you get to some of them through the North Transept through the Statesman's Aisle. So it's not quite clear. But St Andrew's is the one the furthest away from the centre of the church. As it were. So she's sort of behind George Canning, if that makes sense.
Then I think that might not be that one that I can access. I think that must be behind that, which you must only be able to access.
It might not actually be open.
I don't think that's open to the public, is it?
No, and because they've got, you know, that's near where the sort of the audio guides are given out to the tickets desk and things like that. And I think it might not be open. So I think her brother...
So she's got an audience of zero. Sarah, no! That's so sad.
I know. And I was there recently, and I was talking to one of the marshals about Noel Coward, because he's not quite in Poets' Corner. He's kind of slightly off and on his own. And someone else pointed out Sybil Thorndike, who is just beyond Noel Coward, and again, sort of in a path that is not normally open all the time. And it struck me that there's quite a few actresses dotted around the Abbey, not, you know, Aphra Behn is there, who you've talked about on the pod as well. She's out in the cloisters along with Anne Bracegirdle.
Yeah.
Fabulous name, Anne Bracegirdle.
My favourite name in the Abbey, actually, completely going off at tangent, is one which is Connop Thirlwall. Connop. I love that as a name. Connop. Connop Thirlwall. It's a really tricky one to get your tongue and lips around, but yeah, Connop Thirlwall.
Thirlwall. Yeah. What anyway. Did he do?
Absolutely no idea. Just love the name. No, he's on the way enough. As you're coming out. This is very nerdy now, gang. Sorry, this is me just giving Fiona directions. As you are leaving Poets Corner to go out into the cloisters, he's one of those last tombs that you walk over. And I've just always enjoyed his name. No clue what he did. Dead white guy. No idea. But, you know, one of 3,000 burials. And just think his name is great.
I'm with you.
That can be Emily's third baby.
So I think there's a bust of her brother, and she's got a larger than life statue.
And are we talking honkers here? She's got a couple of high beam headlights going on. Is that what you mean?
Oh, no, not necessarily. I'm going to have a look now because I did find a picture of it.
I thought you were saying that in a way of a she's very, very heavily chested.
Just like taller than.
Oh, I see. Okay.
She looked quite drapey. She's very, very decently covered.
Oh, good.
Absolutely. She's got a nice pair of flip-flops and then robes and a kind of scroll in her hand and a bit of headdress. Very kind of Greek. Do I mean Greek? Sort of caryatid-ish, like those sort of ladies you get on a... And we'll put some pictures on the show notes and things so you can see, because she's got a lot of portraits, kind of like I mentioned at the beginning as well. And Thomas Lawrence was the person who painted her most often. And he painted her 14 times.
Casual. Not obsessed at all, mate.
Not obsessed, no. Several of those times were before he was, when he was younger than 13. So by the time he was 13, oh, he'd already painted her a few times. That's and that's creepy. Around about, that's just before she's really got successful. So he obviously, they met. I mean,
that does smack of teenage boy putting, you know, pictures of Pamela Anderson up in their wall, doesn't it? A little bit.
Slightly, yes. But they stayed friends. They stayed friends for a long time. And there was possibly rumours of something a bit more than friendship with him, as there was slightly with one other gentleman. But generally, she was very, very kind of respectable and sort of blurred. Well, no, let's not go there for now. Let's go, stay on this track. So Thomas Lawrence then really falls for one of Sarah's daughters.
This is getting creepier. Thomas, what's wrong with you, mate?
Yeah. So he is a little bit younger than her, but I think probably a little bit older than her daughter. So first of all, there's a worrying phrase. He proposes to... Maria.
Right. Which is the daughter.
Which is the daughter. Okay. Yes. I'm just checking that I've got this the right way round. Yes, I think Maria, the daughter. And to start with, Sarah and William, her husband, not happy with this particularly. But Thomas persists and eventually they go, okay, fine. You can get married. And then I think it turns out that Maria is very ill, and Thomas says, actually, no, change my mind.
He bangs out of it.
So he's then...
He's a nice guy, isn't he, this guy?
Released from his engagement.
Right.
And then proposes to Sally, the other daughter.
Oh, for crying out loud.
So...
This is a bit creepy. Like, he can't have Sarah, so he's going to go through her daughters, but just, you know, selecting the most viable option.
Yeah. But Sarah did say to somebody else in passing, when she died, she wanted her brother and Thomas to carry the coffin. So she was obviously, unless that's some weird revenge. But no, it seems like they stayed friendly throughout her life. And actually he died before her. So there was no, he didn't do the coffin bit.
Blimey.
But yeah, so that's sort of just slightly weird.
Yeah, a bit creepy.
She also, and you'll like this, she has an electric engine. There is one called Sarah Siddons. Now, do you remember when
she doesn't own it?
No, she doesn't own it. It's called named Sarah after Siddons. It's named after her. Yes, this is like things that we have of her that keep sort of surviving as well. So when the Metropolitan line was, 100 years old...
Yeah.
10 years ago. 150 years. 150 years. Old,
I was going to say, I was thinking.
Yeah. They ran some steam trains down the Met for a few weekends, whatever. So at one end of that train was a steam engine, number one Met, whatever. But at the other end was Sarah Siddons. And fantastic. People who are interested in electric engines think that she is an interesting engine in her own right. Kind of. So if I can find a way of putting the little bit, I've got a bit of film of that, I'll see if I can put that on. That'd and most great. People are like, oh, number one, the Met at the front with the steam. But actually, Sarah Siddons was doing
now,
the work
so this
as
is
well.
Really interesting. So what is it about her that has kind of endured so much that, you know, she's back in the 1700s, that in the, 20th and 21st century,
she's still
quite a presence in her name. What is it about her in particular that makes her such a... Because, I mean, it's a name that people know. And, you know, she was quite a glorious... You know, the paintings painted of her, and there's some in the National Portrait Gallery, which Fact Fans has just reopened. There's some really gorgeous...
And there's another one at the Tate. There's one in the National Gallery collection.
And there's lots of things named after her. And what is it about her that...
I don't know. And even her statue, the ones in Paddington Green, 1897 it was put up. So that's not immediately after she dies.
No.
It's about 50 years later.
Yeah.
but maybe she comes to represent, she's an actress, but she's quite a sort of wholesome actress, I think. So maybe for Victorian sensibilities, she seems to exist the gap between her and the character she played is a little bit blurred,
right,
in a way. So part of her, even when she was sort of being successful when she was young, like, or, you know, when she was on the stage, people would sort of almost mix her up with the characters that she was playing, in a way. I don't know. I think she's kind of like one of the first, like, glamorous stage actresses. Yeah,
that's so interesting.
And started to mingle in sort of quite aristocratic circles as well.
So, which, like, always helps.
And some of the portraits are her as, like, the Gainsborough one. She's quite an aristocratic looking lady, but other ones are as like in character. So there's one of her as Lady Macbeth, and there's one of her as the tragic muse. A sec, I did it twice. Hold on, I'm just going to spin around and clap, whatever it is you have to do to ward it off. So the statue in Paddington Green is based on a Reynolds painting of her as the tragic muse. Mm. But, and this is the thing that convinced me most that I wanted to talk about her, bizarrely, in 1952, a Sarah Siddons Society was formed in Chicago, which gives out an award every year.
Okay.
And the reason why, I mean, it's completely seemingly sort of random out of the blue, but 1950, the Best Picture Oscar went to a film called All About Eve.
Right.
Which is about an actress, and an actress kind of going up, like, her career. So the actress is called Eve. And the first scene and the last scene of the film feature a fictional award, the Sarah Siddons Award.
Okay.
And we see this actress winning this award, which the statue, the sort of little statuette she gets, is a version of the statue that is in Paddington Green, which was itself based on the Joshua Reynolds painting.
Wow.
So that's all well and good. So 2 years later, somebody in Chicago says, well, let's have this award. So they take a completely fictional award from the film All About Eve and create the Sarah Siddons Society and award this prize to, originally it was people who had performed in Chicago that year. So it had to be either a touring production or a production based in Chicago. And I think nowadays they've broadened it out. And it's seems to be men and women, and all sorts of people have won it. Lots of big names.
Just the one prize, just the one. Once you bang.
I think there might now be more than one. Okay. I started looking through their website and I didn't quite get to the bottom of it.
Okay.
But I just thought, what an extraordinary legacy, which in a way has nothing to do with her as a person. You know, I love the way that it's sort of mutated through the painting to the statue to the film to the thing.
But you also think, why did the film select her of all people? You know, if there's got to be, I don't know, it's so interesting that, you know, 1950, which is a good, 130 years after she died?
Yeah.
That suddenly plucked her name and
went, she's the one we're going to go with.
It was probably someone who'd come to London and done a tour with a Blue Badge Guide is probably what it was. Seen the statue and then...
And went on a tour to Paddington Green.
Yes. It's where all the cool kids are going.
Yeah, maybe saw her in the Abbey.
Yeah,
but I think she's a sort of, she becomes almost like an archetypal actress, but she's the counterpart to the kind of Nell Gwynn type of actress who actually we should also talk about.
Yeah, we should at some point.
Who is actress plus, let's say mistress for now.
Yeah,
she's the sort of raucous, rowdy, fun-loving actress as opposed to Sarah, who is the tragic muse.
I love it. Gosh, how fantastic. Yeah, you always wonder, it's just such a shame that we don't have, you know, video of some of these amazing people on the stage, because obviously, you know, she was quite iconic and...
Yeah. But and I suspect that if we did, we would look at it and go, oh my God, what's that? Because, you know, in her day, she was seen as being much more naturalistic and much more whatever than one of us who'd gone before. But maybe, you know, acting has changed so much since then that we might find it really weird to see the style of that acting.
Very true.
Also, the other thing about Paddington Green and The West Way is in the musical version of Oliver, with the exclamation mark, Oliver. It's where Oliver meets the Artful Dodger.
Oh, is it now?
So nice little claim to fame, that's Paddington Green.
Yeah, didn't know that.
And the statue there has been restored recently, so they've someone had, I think quite deliberately, sort of vandalised it, so her nose had been chipped off and various things,
right,
and her toe had been broken. So she's been lovingly restored. They have realigned her toe and reattached her nose.
That's very good.
So she's looking much better again.
Fabulous.
Now.
Wow.
So hurrah, there ever since.
Yeah, what a lovely chat about her. Thank you so much. Like I say, she's been someone that I've wanted to explore for a little while and find out why her name pops up, because it pops up all over the place. There's like little, you know, people will have, you know, hotels will have meeting rooms named after her, or they'd be like a pub or a I don't know, some sort of gallery.
She has a pub as well. She was born in Brecon and born in a pub, or certainly lived her early life in a pub. So it was something like the Leg of Mutton, something like that, but it's now the Sarah Siddons. So if you look up Sarah Siddons, one of the first things you'll get is the pub as well.
Oh, love it.
I mean, you know, a pub, railway engine, statue. What more do you need?
I always say to people, and I think I mentioned this as well back when we were talking about Moll. No. Who are we talking about? My name?
Moll Cutpurse.
No, not Moll Cutpurse. Ages ago. Anyway, brain's gone. That you can be famous in the UK, but you're not really truly famous until you've had a pub named after you. I think we're going to now upgrade this to you are like proper national
pub
treasure if you've also had
a
train
engine.
Yeah
and there are, I mean, there are quite a lot of people who do have trains named after them, because an awful lot of trains do have names.
Yeah, they do.
And some, you know, you don't have to be dead to get a train name, you just have to be interesting and inspiring or whatever.
So Sarah Siddons seems to have been. How fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you so much, Fiona. What a great chat about someone I knew very, very little about.
My pleasure.
Might have to pop up there and have a look at the sculpture.
Well, now she's all nice and shiny.
Yeah. We're going to have a look.
Yeah, so I'll put some of the pictures. A lot of the portraits have convoluted copyright situations with them, but the ones that I can find, I will...
We can always pop a link into some of the portraits, so you might have to click through to see them.
Yeah, and also if you were to, you know, do a search of Sarah Siddons portraits, a whole load will pop up online. Yeah. But
For real. We'll put those in the show notes so you can access those as per usual, gang. Thank you so much. Ooh. Well, listen, have you got any sort of final parting words for us today? Anything that anyone needs to know? Upcoming tours, anything like that?
The one that's been mentioned a few times before, Old London, which is kind of the city of London, Wednesday afternoon. So if you're listening to this really early on Wednesday, this afternoon, you could come and join me. But also tomorrow I'm doing the Blitz. So Thursday afternoon I'm doing the Blitz, which is, as the name suggests, all about the Second World War.
What time and where?
2:15 at St Paul's. But ideally have a look at walks.com and book. So or reserve on there. And anything more further ahead? Da, da, da. And then we've got Saturday is the concert.
Yep. And please let us know if you're coming. We'd love to see you. And if I can be there, I will. But this week's been a bit of a sucker punch, so we'll see how I go. But Fiona will definitely be there.
Yes. And I'm doing the Blitz the week after as well. So 6th of July, if you want a bit of a head warning for that. And I think I'm doing a ghost walk for you. I mean, not you personally. But
for my
lovely clients.
Yeah.
Yes. So.
Fantastic. Well, listen, that's it for this week, gang. Thank you all so much for coming along.
Thank you.
We'll see you next week for some more fun. And yeah, we'll see you then.
Yeah.
Or bye-bye. We'll see you at the gig on the 1st of July. Hooray.
Oh, yes. Yay.
Have a great one, gang. Bye.
Bye.